A man was hiking out in Colorado and he saw an eagle's egg roll off a high cliff and land in some bushes. The bushes were thick and plush, and so the egg was unharmed. The man looked up at the cliff and he knew there was no way for him to climb up there and place the egg back in the nest. So he carried it with him for a moment, and a few minutes later he came across a wild turkey's nest, and he put the eagle's egg in the turkey's nest. As time passed, the eagle hatched along with the turkeys. He was raised with the turkeys. Wild turkeys don't fly very far, they don't fly very fast, and they don't fly very high. One day, an eagle soared overhead, and the young eagle watched it, and then he asked one of the turkeys, "Why can they fly so high?" This is not a true story, you've figured out by now. At least that I know of. Why can they fly so high and we can barely get off the ground? The turkey answered, "Because they are eagles and we are turkeys." And so the eagle lived as a turkey and he never soared as high as his wings were designed to carry him, because he never learned to think for himself. He never learned to stand on his own. He never developed his own convictions. He became like those around him. Herd immunity is defined as being immune from personal responsibility because we are part of the right group or herd. This young eagle had given up who he was in order to be part of the group around him. He lost his own voice, if you will. He gave up his own individuality. Socially, morally, religiously, spiritually, it's easy just to go with the flow. It's easy to develop herd immunity because we see ourselves as being immune in that setting, being immune from personal responsibility because we're part of the right group. We're part of the right herd. When one keeps company with those whose religious and moral ideals are healthy and wholesome, they can give little thought to these issues and still get by, at least in terms of basic morality. We tend to become like those with whom we associate, and that can be beneficial or that can be harmful, but God is not looking for people who are satisfied with just getting by. And God is not looking for people who are satisfied with the fact that they are part of the right group or herd. God is looking for people who are looking for Him. People who are seeking Him. People who want to know Him. God deals with and has dealt with people on a national level and in other groupings, but that being said, God still deals with people as individuals. The classic passage which illustrates this is perhaps Ezekiel chapter 18. I'm going to read several verses there. Beginning in verse 1, Ezekiel 18:1. "The word of the Lord came to me," Ezekiel says. What do you people mean by quoting this proverb about the land of Israel? Here's the proverb. "The parents eat sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, you will no longer quote this proverb in Israel, for everyone belongs to me. The parent as well as the child, both alike belong to me. The one who sins is the one who will die. Suppose there is a righteous man who does what is just and right." That's verse 5. And then verse 6 through 9 lists bad things that this man does not participate in and good things that he does. Then verse 10 says, "Suppose he has a violent son." So this is a good man, a righteous man. And then suppose that man has a violent son who sheds blood or does any of these other things, though the father has done none of them. So then this son, verses 11 and 12, gives a list of the wicked behaviors he engages in. And then verses 13 and 14 says, "Will such a man live, this son of this righteous man? He will not, Because he's done all these detestable things, he is to be put to death. His blood will be on his own head. But then, verse 14, suppose this son has a son who sees all the sins of his father, and though he sees them, he does not do such things. So now we're the grandson. And then verse 15 through 17 details this man's righteous behaviors, and it picking up in the last part of verse 17 and reading through verse 20, the text says, "This son keeps my laws and my decrees. He will not die for his father's sin. He will surely live. But his father will die for his own sin because he practiced extortion, robbed his brother, and did what was wrong among his people. Yet you ask, why does the son not share the guilt of the father? Since the son has done what is just and right and has been careful to keep all my decrees, he will surely live. The one who sins is the one who will die. The child will not share the guilt of the parent, nor will the parent share the guilt of the child. The righteousness of the righteous will be credited to them, and the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against them." Just as a college basketball team either rises or falls as a team, basketball scouts will still be looking at those players as individuals. God deals with people, again, as a community, for example, and as a nation and other groupings. But God always holds people accountable and judges people as individuals. And so we will be held accountable as individuals for the choices that we make. In Exodus 32, verses 1 through 4, and then picking up in verses 19 through 24, the setting is Moses on Mount Sinai. Verse 1 says, "When the people saw how long it was taking Moses to come back down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, 'Come on, make us some gods who can lead us. We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses who brought us up here from the land of Egypt.' So Aaron said, 'Take the gold rings from the ears of your wives and sons and daughters and bring them to me.' All the people took the gold rings from their ears and brought them to Aaron. Then Aaron took the gold, melted it down, and molded it into the shape of a calf. When the people saw it, they exclaimed, 'O Israel, these are the gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt.' Then they began to participate in all kinds of ungodly behavior. Moses became aware of it while on the mountain. He comes down, we pick up in verse 19. When Moses came down from the mountain, he saw the calf and the dancing, and he burned with anger. He threw the stone tablets to the ground, smashing them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf they had made and burned it. Then he ground it into powder, threw it into the water, and forced the people to drink it. Finally, he turned to Aaron and demanded, 'What did these people do to you to make you bring such terrible sin upon them?' 'Don't get upset, my lord,' Aaron replied. 'You yourself know how evil these people are. They said to me, "Make us gods who will lead us." We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses who brought us here from the land of Egypt. So I told them, "Whoever has gold jewelry, take it off." When they brought it to me, I simply threw it in the fire, and out came this calf." Think about that. This is a grown man. Would he really expect you to believe? Aaron allowed the crowd to determine his behavior. It's an easy thing to do. At times, it's a very difficult thing not to do. And instead of just owning his behavior, Aaron blamed the people. Then he tried to convince Moses that he just cast the jewelry into the fire and this calf just popped out. We need to take responsibility for our own choices because God holds us accountable for our own actions. We need to take responsibility for our own choices because God will judge us as individuals. we might convince others, and we might even convince ourselves, that others are responsible for our bad choices. And others may bear some of the blame, but when it's a choice that we made, when it's choices that we are making by our own free will, we are responsible, and God holds us accountable. In Matthew chapter 16, read a few moments ago, Jesus asked the disciples, "Who are people saying that I am?" All the opinions about him were wrong. But even if others happen to be giving the right answer, Jesus still wants to know, "But who do you say that I am? What is your conviction?" Matthew 16, 15. And Jesus wants to know, are you saying that merely because of what others are saying? Mark 14, verses 27 through 31. We're told that on the way, Jesus told them, the disciples, "All of you will desert me. For the scriptures say, God will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. But after I'm raised from the dead, I will go ahead of you to Galilee and meet you there." Peter said to him, "Even if everyone else deserts you, I never will." Well, that's good. That's the point. That's where we're going here. Individual conviction. Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth, Peter, this very night before the rooster crows twice, you will deny three times that you even know me." "No," Peter declared emphatically, "even if I have to die with you, I will never deny you." And all the others vowed the same. Another translation says, "And they all said likewise." Yeah, what he said. And that's good. I'm sure they all meant it. But what happened? Notice Jesus' interest in the individual's personal thoughts and convictions in Luke 10, 25 through 26, also read earlier by Stephen. One day an expert in religious law stood up to test Jesus by asking him this question, "Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus replied, "What does the law of Moses say? How do you read it?" What's your understanding about it? Jesus is not looking for people who will follow him because others are following him. Jesus is looking for people who will follow him even if no one else is following him. If one is where he is only because he's let himself be led there or be carried there by other people, that does not constitute either faith or obedience in God's eyes, even when our direction has been generally good. A puppet that hardly ever commits sin, a puppet that mouths all the right views, is still a puppet. We must believe the truth in our own hearts. We must do what is right ourselves. James chapter 1, verse 21 through 27. Notice the individualistic emphasis here. "So get rid of all the filth and evil in your lives and humbly accept the word God has planted in your hearts, for it has the power to save your soul. But don't just listen to God's word. You must do what it says. Otherwise, you are only fooling yourselves. For if you listen to the word and don't obey it, it's like glancing at your face in a mirror. You see yourself, walk away, and forget what you look like. But if you look carefully into the perfect law that sets you free, and if you do what it says and don't forget what you heard, then God will bless you for doing it. If you claim to be religious but don't control your tongue, you are fooling yourself and your religion is worthless. Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you." We serve God as individuals. If we are only following others, we won't know what to do when we face personal crises in our own lives. We won't have the moral courage or the conviction to stand for what we believe in, probably because to some degree we won't know necessarily what to believe in. In the past, when people in this country were more nearly alike in their basic values, it might have been more possible to go with the flow and end up being a fairly decent person. But our world has changed significantly. Now many Americans differ radically even on the fundamental questions of reality. One would have to be a modern-day Rip Van Winkle, awakened only an hour ago, not to know this. The person who's not willing to work at forming responsible personal convictions will often see his life crumble into the chaos of our modern culture. 2 Peter 1 verse 10 says, "Dear brothers and sisters, work hard to prove that you are really among those God has called and chosen." Ephesians 5, 15 through 17, "Be very careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but live like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what the Lord wants you to do. Understand the will of the Lord." Careful living, be very careful how you live. Careful living means cautious and thoughtful living. It requires study and reflection and prayer. It involves integrity and independence and character. All of this spells effort. It spells work. You cannot accomplish this by going with the flow. You cannot accomplish this by selecting autopilot. You cannot accomplish this with the herd immunity mentality. We have to learn to grow up. We have to learn to make tough decisions, decisions that will sometimes offend others and embarrass others, not because we want to be offensive, not because we want to embarrass others, but because we must have the courage to stand up and do what we believe is right, regardless of the outcome. In Numbers chapter 25, verses 1 through 13, I'm just going to read verse 1 and then start again with verse 6. We're told that while the Israelites were camped at Acacia Grove, some of the men defiled themselves by having sexual relations with local Moabite women. In verse 6, one of the Israelite men brought a Midianite woman into his tent right before the eyes of Moses and all the people as everyone was weeping at the entrance of the tabernacle. When Phinehas, son of Eleazar and grandson of Aaron the priest, saw this, he jumped up and left the assembly. He took a spear and rushed after the man into his tent. Phinehas thrust the spear all the way through the man's body and into the woman's stomach. So the plague against the Israelites was stopped, but not before 24,000 people had died. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Phinehas, son of Eleazar and grandson of Aaron the priest, has turned my anger away from the Israelites by being as zealous among them as I was. So I stopped destroying all Israel as I had intended to do in my zealous anger. Now tell him that I am making my special covenant of peace with him. In this covenant I give him and his descendants a permanent right in the priesthood. For in his zeal for me, his God, he purified the people of Israel, making them right with me." We are living in an upside-down world right now. And it's getting more upside-down each day. Times like these force us to choose. Can't just say, "Yeah, what he said," whoever happens to be standing. I could say a lot on just that. Joshua 24:15 says, "Choose this day whom you will serve. We are not to bend the truths and the standards of God to fit the norms of society. We must have the courage to bend ourselves and to teach others how far they must bend in order to be what God would have them to be. 1 Peter 1, verse 13, Peter says, "Prepare your minds for action and exercise self-control. Put all your hope in the gracious salvation that will come to you when Jesus Christ is revealed to the world." 1 Peter 5, verse 8 and 9, "Stay alert, watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Stand firm against him and be strong in your faith." We can't just go with the flow and please God. We can't seek safety and herd immunity. We can't live our lives on autopilot and expect to be strong and healthy individuals who will be pleasing to God. Again, herd immunity is defined as being immune from personal responsibility because we're part of the right group or herd. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 9 and 10, "Whether we are here in this body or away from this body, our goal is to please him. For we must all stand before Christ to be judged. We will each receive whatever we deserve for the good or evil we have done in this earthly body." We don't get herd immunity before God. Each and every one of us must worship him. We must live and serve him intentionally, thoughtfully, on purpose, and with conviction.